I'm going to call this meeting order, American Rescue Plan Act Special Committee. Today is September 13th, 2022, and it's 4:05 p.m. And Clerk Feaster, if you can call the roll.
Criswell.
Here.
Corcoran.
Here.
Levine.
Here.
Lopez.
Here.
Sperry.
Here.
Chair Bartels.
Here.
Great, thank you. And we are going to jump right into resolutions. So resolution 400. So this has already been scored, and we were holding it basically to figure out whether the resolution itself had to be rewritten to actually bake in the idea of having it be a one-year contracted position and then transfer to a salaried position after that. And what we decided through many conversations was that it did not have to be written into the resolution itself, that it is in the budget, and that's the way that we'll be looking at it. And so, but I did want to give the opportunity to Legislator Nolan, if you have anything that you want to say about that, or any sort of final buttons you want to put on this.
No, except to say that I think that we did go through a good process on that. We talked to the head clerk. We talked with the staff in the ARPA committee, in the ARPA management team, and the executive's office, and everybody agreed in the end that putting it in this way allows us the flexibility. We would need to define for 2024 what we're doing in 2024, but we don't do that in 2022.
All right, thank you. I want to open the floor to any other comments or questions about this resolution. So Chair Bartels.
Thank you. So I spoke with the sponsor, and we had a good conversation. I do still want to talk to former Legislator DeLon, but have not been able to make that happen yet. You know, I want to begin by saying I've said this to the sponsor directly, but I'll say it out loud on the floor. I would actually support potentially spending all of the remaining ARPA funds on agriculture and agriculture relief. So this is, my concerns about this are not about the expenditure of funds. It's just, as I've said before, the significant contribution to in $3,000 increments to 250 farms is a concern to me. And what this resolution does, which we've occasionally done before, is just basically it's taking $2 million, and the sponsor's done an amazing amount of work in terms of the detail of the backup, but we're not tied to the backup. This is just creating the project and moving $2 million, and then it's like off and running. But if I'm to follow the backup and believe that that's what we're actually gonna do, I think $3,000 grants to 250 farms, to me, is going to have a questionable benefit. Like, it's hard for me to believe that it's the make or break, and I think that there are farms out there who are in need of the make or break. I support the position. I think it was a good, idea to make it a contracted position, because we don't know where we're going to go. In terms of 2024, that's not ARPA money. That's a decision that legislature will make next year. Like, do we want to continue this, and do we want to create a position in the budget which will have legacy costs, which I'm not afraid of legacy costs when they're warranted. Again, I'm concerned about that, and I don't think about the expenditure, the significant expenditure in small increments to these smaller farms.
So I think in our conversation, I may not have clarified, and I may not have clarified for this committee fully either, but the way this is set up, it would look like that 250 farms might get $3,000. I don't expect that to happen. The monies for the supplemental and expand the funding, those can go to a farm in addition to a $3,000 base. So, and it probably should have been believed that the over $300,000 would be divided up between farms that are already doing these carbon capture or soil health initiatives to get them beyond the caps that state money generally has on it, or in some federal monies. So a farm, for example, that is capped right now to receive $5,000 from soil and water for cover cropping could receive $10,000 more. So $15,000 for that, $3,000 if they're also a low income farm, and whatever else they're doing. So they could get to the $25,000 range. I don't think we have, as a county, with the money I felt that I could request and have appropriated this year, beyond about a $25,000 package for many of the farms. But that's what I'm hoping that most of the farms will get to, because they're either doing some of these things already or they're willing to do them, and they're also low income. So the $3,000 is like a kind of bump you up kind of thing. There might be some farms that only get the $3,000 because they're not doing any of this and don't want to commit to doing any of it. And that's a little bit problematic. I think it's a what I call a freeloader problem from the ethics world, where if you build a program, there's some people that can, you're running a train, there's some people that can jump on the train who don't pay for the ticket. But trying to keep those people off the train is problematic and lead to injuries and so forth. And it doesn't really hurt the people that are already on the train, because they're going where they're going. So this program is set up that somebody might be doing something small in terms of farming, have low income, and receive this benefit. I don't see a way to make the program rigid enough to keep them out without making it burdensome to the farmers who do qualify and are telling us they want it low administrative, they wanted it as easy as possible to get in. So this design is to make it as easy as possible to get in, and it will benefit most farmers who apply for it at much more than $3,000.
And I think the other thing that we've talked about a couple times now is that as the ARPA spending shakes out, and if we see if there's any excess in funds, we could also apply that directly to this program if we felt like there was all of a sudden a really great need that we hadn't seen. So, Ms. Chair Bartos.
Yeah, I mean, the supplemental and expanded programs make a lot of sense to me, and I think those I don't really have an issue with. It's more, you know, when you talk about low-income farms, it's not necessarily low-income farmers. It's like it's the farm. So again, it would, as was established at the last meeting I was at, it could apply to someone who has created an LLC to hay their own multi-million-dollar estate, and they're making basically no money on the farm, but they'd be eligible for the $3,000. And I think of it in relation to, you know, the federal subsidies that we all got during COVID. You know, for some people, those checks were life-altering, and for some people, those checks were like, oh, it's great, it's nice to have a check, I'll just put it in the bank. And, you know, I think that our farms, in some cases, are in real dire and desperate need, and that's what I appreciate about you bringing this to the table, because we were talking about it, but there was nothing in front of us. So that's huge. I cannot overstate how big that is, in addition to all the work that's done. I just really feel that that we should do a little more work trying to figure out, and maybe it's this person that's going to be hired, maybe that person would create an amended program. But again, what we're doing right now is just essentially saying, okay, this is $2 million. Here's the backup, but there's nothing, and this is also something that's new that's happened with ARPA. It's not the way we in the legislature normally do business. Like, that was my objection, Deputy Executive Ryder, you know, heard it now for a long time, about creating these capital projects. The idea of, like, they're not capital projects, and it's just a means of moving money over to a capital project that's not a capital project that then gets distributed technically however the ARPA group, or in this case, wants to do it. This has been a collaborative exercise. I'm not saying that you guys are operating in a vacuum and just doing whatever you want, but functionally, that's what's on paper. That's what we're doing on paper. So, you know, I feel that we should really rethink. You know, I'd asked for the backup of who these people are. And again, we had that crazy conversation on Zoom where it was like, part of the benefit of this was we'd be able to identify the 250 people and then farms and then legislator Litz said, you know, someone said we should spend money to identify them, and someone said that's a lot of money, and then legislator Litz said, well, we don't have to pay any money, we can get that information, and then someone else said, well, where's the information, and then no one's, and then Soil and Water said, we can't give the information, and meanwhile, here we are, we don't even have a list of who these 250 people are right
now.
Yeah,
I'm in error there. I did receive from the planning department a list of all the farms that are registered as agricultural districts, so, and that is public information, it turns out. So that came in while I was traveling.
How many were there?
I didn't count them, but it does look like it's about the 200 to 300 range. It's about 5 or 6 sheets. And I can forward that to the whole committee. I really apologize. I came in just before I left town.
That would be great.
Can I ask a quick question? So with the other ARPA spending, there have been criteria that groups have had to fill out, lots of paperwork to figure, you know, that we've been sorting out. Are they going to be able to get through these hoops to get this funding? Even though you said it's a simplified effort, I'm assuming that there's going to be some sort of criteria that all the farms will have to fulfill. So maybe that will actually be a place where we can actually look. If it's a multi-million dollar farm that has shown absolutely no hardship through the pandemic, maybe they wouldn't qualify for this initial $3,000. I don't know. I'm just saying that that's something that we can figure out, I think, as we get a sense of getting somebody hired. I feel like the process should be get somebody hired, get somebody to look at the whole landscape, understand it, understand all the different farms, look at the different possibilities for criteria, come up with a simple criteria for that first $3,000, and then take it step by step that way. Does that seem like it's something that would...
I started working with the ARPA management team, Nate in particular, on an application form. And so it could be possible that on that item there's an upper income disqualifier. If you made more than $500,000 in total income last year, even if your farm was failing, you don't qualify.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is a great point, because if we can move this forward, we start getting concrete with all of this. And I would love to work with the chair on the next $2 million or $20 million that we would put towards farmers. But I think if we don't start in with this, we won't have the person to help us, and we won't be responding to the immediate need of the farmers that have come to us and said, you're doing stuff for everybody else in the county, can you do something for us? So that was the design of this. And I think it does require more of a leap of faith. But we have the ARPA management team, we now have Ulster County Planning, both Amanda Laval and Dennis Doyle are working on this with me. We have Tim Wiedemann, and we have Nick over in the Department of Environment. So I don't think we have a lack of oversight on this. We do have it moving ahead in order to get the details, and that requires a little trust, which I'm asking the legislature to put into this.
Legislator Levine?
Yeah, it was just in regards to your comment, Mr. Chairman. You know, I want to make sure I'm understanding that, you know, both yourself, Chair Bartels, and Legislator Nolan, are you suggesting that we at least put some type of means test on this for at least a portion of the money?
I'm suggesting that should be part of the conversation.
Okay.
I don't know if we should or shouldn't, but we have to talk about
it. I think that would be a good idea to kind of go around the members of the committee to kind of get their take on. I don't have an issue with it myself,
mm-hmm.
But I'd be happy to hear what other members of the committee have opinions on it.
Sure.
I just want to say, too, to that point, until you get applications in, you won't know. Just because there's 250 to 300 farms that sign up for ag districts doesn't mean they're all going to apply for this relief. So, I mean, setting up something where you have a long time period to apply, and then you could evaluate what's necessary once you've gotten that.
Chair Bartels?
Yeah, I mean, and I want to respond to Legislator Nolan, but on that point, I mean, I believe that there's a certain number of farms, potentially even a lot of farms, that don't apply for ag districts. I mean, I know our CSA, the CSA that I was a member of for years, that was not in the ag district, an active farm serving over 300 families. So it's a decision that the farms make. So that's the other metric happening here. I mean, I would feel better if I had a, if, and I'm, I feel like I'm hearing this from you a little bit, I would feel better if I knew that there was a willingness once this, the person, the correct person's hired, whoever it is, to work with all, with you and with all the people that you, in the executive side of the house, to actually be open potentially to changing the funding if necessary. Like maybe it isn't this 3,000 per farm, because again, it's, I haven't seen the list of who the 250 in the ag district are, and I'd like to, I'd be very curious who's not in an ag district and where the need actually falls. And that's really, that's what I'm struggling with, because it's very hard for me to say no to ag, but I also feel like we're moving really quickly. ARPA team's here, and they'll acknowledge that, you know, we've only actually effectuated, you know, one or two of the programs that we've passed, because there's a ton of work to do to get through all of these programs. You're three people, and there's only so many hours in the day, right? We still have the for-profits that applications haven't even begun, right? So, and that's one of many. So, again, I'm on the fence, because I want to be supportive, and I want to be supportive of the work, but I also want to, I want at least a modicum of confidence that there's going to be an openness to maybe saying, okay, this, the 3,000, like maybe it's all cover cut. Maybe we spend more in the supplemental and expansion, or maybe there's a different metric whereby we actually be giving slightly bigger subsidies. I'm less concerned about spreading it to everyone. And again, if you see 250 that are in the ag districts, there's probably a lot more than I am about getting it to people who need it the most, farms that need it the most.
So I totally agree with you, and I just think we can't know those answers until we actually get somebody in place and do the research. And then, but I understand what you're asking for is the willingness to say it will be a conversation, it will be a process that happens, and I think Legislator Nolan has agreed to that many times.
Okay.
Do we need it in writing? Do we need it?
No.
Okay. Legislator Wolf.
Well, I mean, I guess I understand that the concern is that it may not be articulated right now, that openness. It sort of sounds more formulaic. And I just wonder, through the chair to Legislator Nolan, you know, this makes me think of the change that was made to like the soup kitchen food service, is that using Ulster Core to gather people who really know what the issues are and determine the appropriate way to spend. So we don't know what the answer is, but we are trusting a group of people who are the right group of people. So what if this was a person hired who gathered, I mean, we have Rondell Valley Growth, we have so many of these different groups, that maybe if this person gathers the necessary smart people, and the conversation is how to spend, and it's the same process. And then that way, you know, if the, maybe the 3,000 is on it, or maybe it's not. It sounds like you're saying, you know, that's not what you're tied to as much as, like, let's get this money there, let's start a plan. But had you considered perhaps sort of modeling it the same way as the soup kitchen model, and taking that approach?
Well, I did talk with Cornell Cooperative Extension, who would be the natural group to do that kind of thing. They were not interested, and so they would not respond to an RFP that was drawn along those lines.
I'm thinking the person you're thinking, sorry, just to say that would still be true.
So, yes, except that I would say that if we're waiting for that person, that then we're two or three more months down the road. So the idea was that we would work on this. We've got people who are willing to work on this while we're doing the RFP process, while we're putting somebody in place, and have a draft. And I would welcome everybody who wants to have input on it. The reason there was this $3,000 component is that we have many, many small farms in Ulster County who do not get any state or federal money, because all of those programs depend upon multiplying acreage times a certain set fee. And if you've got 5 acres or 25 acres and you get $5 an acre, you've got a $75 award or $750 award, and it's not worth the effort. So the small farmers in particular, represented well on the Soil and Water Conservation Board, and others I've talked with said, have something where we can just get a little support, because we don't qualify for anything. And I was convinced by that, so that's the reason that this got in here. If it means that money goes to somebody who doesn't need it, I'm certainly happy to try to build something in that prevents that. None of the people I talked to said that $3,000 would be too little for them to apply for. They felt like it was finally somebody listening to them and giving them at least something. So I don't think that the concern will be that there are farms who say, you know, this isn't worth the effort. This is designed to be easy, no effort almost. And so that's where I would like to continue to head. I think that the person we hire, or if it's a institution that we hire, a group, organization, will help us finalize this. And I think that then we go forward and we gather some more information. This is a lot of money, but it's not as much money as needs to be spent on this issue. So I think it's our start in on this. And the next package of money that we want to put together, I think we will have learned something from what we do here.
I mean, I guess though, what I'm not quite understanding is hearing that it's not simply if they're on that list, they're going to get a check in the mail.
No.
And so there's some process, which means, I mean, we know like the small businesses put in their applications months ago. So it's not going to just happen, no matter what. They're going to have to queue in online for a bunch of other, you know, screenings and assessments that, you know, one way or another, this isn't going to be a turnaround where they're going to see this money in the next few months. Not if there's a process. If you're just going to take the list and give everyone on the list 2,000, that's one thing, but I mean, we all know what these processes are.
Can we hear from the comptroller?
I just wanted to note that the 2017 Ag Census, which is the last Ag Census that was done, shows, I think, around 450 farms in Ulster County. So there are a lot of farms that are not actually registered as Ag District. And I also wanted to mention that Ulster County for years had an ongoing contract with an entity called Hudson Valley Agribusiness Development Corporation, which works for multiple counties throughout the Hudson Valley, primarily through the industrial development agencies. Our IDA stopped having a contract with them years ago. I don't know why, but they do this kind of screening, this kind of work regularly for other programs, and it might be worth having a conversation
there.
That's
interesting.
Yeah.
Tip your executive writer.
I just want to clarify one point. I don't think that any of the projects that haven't been finished have to do with the three that are working on the art management team. They may be busy, but they have plenty of capacity to handle more projects. Some of these, like the Crisis Stabilization Center and other things, are very complex, like either legal purchases or other things that take a long time and will take a decent amount of time to finish. So, I mean, everybody's busy here in county government, and they're no different, but I think that they have capacity to work on a program like this.
Thank you. I'm conscious of time. It's 4:30, so what I'd like to do is actually call this for a vote. All right, so all in favor?
Oh, take a motion.
Oh, yeah, all right, I need a motion.
Motion.
Yeah, second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Okay, 6-0.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Legislator Nolan, for
thanks.
All your work on
thanks
this.
All of you.
And
thank you.
Looking forward to seeing this pass.
You're all right. Find me.
All right. Could I get a motion to discuss resolution 450?
Motion.
Second, please. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. All right. So this is the contract for the mental health in schools program. So there was a little bit of confusion about this because I think when it went through, it didn't have ARPA language in it, but it now has the correct ARPA language. Is that correct? Has it been changed or?
It's certainly been clarified.
Okay.
So it never went through your committee, just so you know.
Yeah, it never.
It had ARPA language, but never went through your committee.
Got it. Okay. So it never came through to us.
This contract, the Mental Health for Schools program did.
Correct.
This contract did not.
Correct. And that was
but
passed.
We've already allocated the $750,000 for mental health in schools.
Right.
In
ARPA.
Meeting?
Yeah.
No, that's not what we understood.
No, the project for mental health in schools was established as Resolution 290, which dedicated $750,000 to the purpose. This contract is a separate and unique resolution that's going to be serving that purpose approved by 290 in
the
part.
290 resolution comes through the ARPA committee.
Correct.
Yes.
It did, and it passed unanimously.
Yep.
And so what this is a contract for $979,241, which is a combination of the $750,000 from ARPA money, as well as $229,241 from the state aid, which was the opioid settlement fund that happened. So together, those are funding this contract, which is going to be with LaSalle to enter into this mental health in schools program. So anybody want to speak on this?
Sure. Just to say, for what it's worth, so Schedule A has been changed.
Legislator Walter is speaking.
Yeah, Schedule A has been changed. I don't know if you probably have that in your resolution, clarifying just elements of how many kids will be served. It's not 100, but it's more like 400 to 500, and that they are not just spending 1 hour a week, but actually 120 hours. Yeah, so those kinds of elements were adjusted.
I appreciate you digging into that, because I know that you had some concerns. And so do you feel comfortable with it now? Okay, that's great. If there's no further discussion, I think we should just vote on this. No. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Oh, we're back to, we have to actually sign the documents now.
Yes.
And pass them all around. So we're back in that mode. So.
You want me to do 400 also?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to give the floor for new business to Legislator Walter to talk about eviction services.
Thank you.
This
conversation came up in several different ways. It came up, it started to be discussed in a couple of the housing work groups, as well as a sidebar related to a resolution that Legislator Uchitel has put forth for eviction protection that has been postponed repeatedly. And so it also was a recognition that our public defender's office cannot do any kinds of work to protect, to support those individuals who are facing eviction. That's not in there, legally they're not allowed to. And so recognizing though that we have a lot of evictions happening after the COVID relief has passed, and a lot of individuals who are facing housing insecurity that way, I put through an RFP requesting for agencies to submit to do eviction legal services. The RFP does include the legal services, but it also includes education and outreach so that our constituents know that these services are available and they know what their rights are. So there's an educational and outreach element to it, as well as providing all of the necessary legal services. We expect to have the bids in this Friday, and then I'll be putting forth in October a resolution to fund this. I'm hoping it's ARPA funded. It fits very perfectly with ARPA. It would be for a very set amount of time, although if we felt that it should continue, we could discuss it for a future budget, but that it would be a very specific amount of time, see how it works, see if it's making a difference, has an impact. You know, the real need is right now, I mean, people need legal services for evictions all the time, but it's a heightened need because of COVID. So to me, it fits very well into the ARPA guidance. And so this is my time telling you it's coming.
I have some questions. So are the legal services side and the education and outreach side going to be two different entities doing it? It's going to be all one?
Yeah,
is
one
it?
Entity is expected to
okay,
do it all.
Okay, got it. And this will serve the full county, obviously. Mm-hmm. And what sort of dollar amount are you thinking?
So I was guided to not think and wait for these proposals to
okay.
come in. So I think that assuming, you know, what's nice about this is if for some reason it's a startling amount, we could reduce the amount of services they're offering.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that flexibility. But, you know, there's that concern of putting out an RFP and having some publicized amount, and then they're bidding towards that. So it seemed better to let them bid, and then we'll work it out.
That totally makes sense.
I don't even have a guess, in other words.
Chair Bartels.
Thanks. Thank you for doing all that work. I just have one question. It's more of a suggestion, and do with it what you will. I think the education aspect's really important, just letting people know what their rights are, but we might want to also consider educating landlords about what their, you know, what their restrictions are. I mean, I don't expect that every landlord's going into this with as a horrible landlord, but we have in this county, at least in my districts, most of the landlords are single family homeowners, and they may not know what they are bound by in terms of evicting someone. And so there may be some value to also getting that information out in a nice way, just so that maybe we could prevent some evictions.
Right. I mean, we certainly could talk about it. I will say that landlords typically can afford their own attorneys when the renters can't. And landlords don't usually move to an eviction without really finding out their legal rights and capacities, while someone who gets the note is the one who's usually, you know, had no idea this was coming. But I think that, you know, the promotion and identifying that this will be something in the county, of course the landlords will hear about it and understand it. It'll be interesting to see how they talk about how they're going to educate about what the rights are, but I would imagine whatever they do to educate, I mean, we do say you also have to particularly target those people who are of the lowest income, but that whatever their education is, will probably disseminate to everybody.
Yeah.
But we'll see. And I'll just say, on that note, you know, the Schedule C is yet to be written on what exactly their deliverables are. So I would encourage anyone, we're gonna have a special Health, Human Services, and Housing meeting once the RFPs are in to go through, the bids are in. And that will be where we have the chance to refine the Schedule C. You'll be there already. But, you know, anyone else who wants to be there to really assure that the necessary elements. And again, I think that outreach and education is the one thing that they'll know what they have to do in terms of legal services. I think our conversation about what we want education and outreach to look like will be the most.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I'll come to that meeting and I'll think this through. I think in terms of eviction, there's certainly a set number of people who get the notice, who it's going through a legal process, but there are also people who get locked out of their homes or, you know, told like that's, and so they're not going through any formal process. There's not a court, and so I guess that's just what I'm thinking about. Just so that, especially people renting homes, not big landlords, not multi-unit landlords. They certainly have lawyers and they know, but just so they know, you know, there are now restrictions, there are now protections in place, and you should be well aware of that too, going into this arrangement with someone in your home. And maybe that'll help us longer term. So this may not be a part of this, but there may be.
Or it might be. Model. I think when we see what they propose, we might be able to see, because I think it's more than just when the eviction's in front of them, but the protection, so that they know what their rights are from the beginning, so they know if their door is locked,
right,
what they're allowed to do. And
exactly.
Then what's nice is that means that there's a number they can call and be like, my door's locked, what do I do?
Right.
And there's an attorney who's going to be ready to help them.
Or my power's off, or
right,
you know, any number of things.
Are there any other programs that you've seen that are like this? Or?
Well, so legal services does try to do this. I mean, they provide this, but they've made it clear they don't have the resources to do it at any big
level.
Because
didn't they have a guy, Peter, I forget his name. He was sort of the guy who...
I don't know. But I will say, so when I created the RFP, I found, I don't know if you remember, but like I think there was one in California, there was a few existing programs that are really robust that I utilize their language to come up with our own. So there are some, but not necessarily right here.
I just had a question, like what's the time period that you're thinking?
So it's interesting, you know, because there was this idea of do we just try to wait and put it in this budget, but we know people desperately need this right now. So I think we should, when we see it and see what the bid is it ARPA for, you know, whatever, know, 14 months. We want to get it to the end of 2023.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so how the best way of getting it to the end of 2023 is, I think we're open to talking about it. I mean, I would like it funded. Whether it's fully ARPA, partly ARPA, or whatever, I'd like it to be funded through the end of 2023.
I'll be so curious to see where the dollar amount lies, because kudos, $100,000, is it $1 million? Is it,
and it'll also be good or bad,
right,
that we'll see the estimate of how many people are going to be impacted,
because
for them to get to the dollar, they have to say how many people they think they're going to serve,
right,
and I'm really interested to see what they think is the need.
So we don't have any eviction service programs here yet, but we do have two other contracts with legal providers. OFA does legal services for seniors,
mm-hmm,
and our probation department, Crime Victims, does legal services with Legal Services of the Hudson Valley for those going through domestic violence. So we do have programs in place similar to this.
Okay.
Right. Just we contract with, yeah.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, good.
So that was another question we're thinking about. Do you think that this entity, whoever's like bidding, is going to be from Ulster County?
We'll see. It would be very hard to imagine how you could do this and not be reasonably local.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I would assume at least a more regional group will be in that.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's expensive. It would be hard to imagine an Albany organization doing it. I realize like it could be something like legal services, or it could be a law firm that says that they want to add this element to what they're doing. I mean, it'll be very interesting to see who ends up bidding for this, but you know, I would imagine if they're not local, it's going to be a lot more expensive, because that's a very hard thing to do, because they have to go to court with these people. These people are here.
Mm-hmm.
How are you getting the word out about this?
That's their job.
That's our channels. Peter Frank is who you're thinking of.
Yeah.
So we send it out. Obviously, we advertise in the papers, but we also send it out electronically through BidNet. And
got it. Okay.
They contact people who have signed up to receive notifications. So
okay.
It's not a bad idea to get it in front of the bar, though, so I'll make sure that.
By Friday. I mean, it's a due Friday, so if you can call people's attention right away, that would be great.
Right. I thought it was due a little later than that, but yeah. All right.
Well, that's great. Looking forward to seeing how this progresses. Thank you so much. All right. We have some old business. I don't know if anybody can speak to this, actually. It's the Homeowner Energy Improvement and Job Training Project. I think this was Dennis Doyle.
Good.
So I think... I don't think anybody's here to speak to this, so I think we're just going to move on that. And then I do want to talk a little bit about the financial updates. So look at this beautiful new tracker that we have. It's so exciting. So this is take a bow. Is this you? All right. So as we talked about, as we spend down the money, our next job is really going to be about tracking the projects and looking at, you know, the progress of the spending, basically. And so Nate's pulled together this initial tracker, and what I'd love to have legislators do, committee members do, is just take a look at it, see if it makes sense to you. Is there anything that is not on here that you want to be seeing? Is there anything that needs clarification? I don't think we have to go through it right now, because again, I'm conscious of time, but take a look at it, make sure that it makes sense to you all, and this has been sent to you electronically as well, so you all have copies of this. And again, thank you for pulling this together, because this is our next piece of work that we're going to be doing. So if everything is approved that we talked about today, our remaining ARPA funds would be $2,294,655. So we are getting toward the end of the funding here. We still have several priorities, which I will pick back up again when we meet next. We'll talk about those priorities and what's still in the works, and whether we want to rejig our priorities. And we have a quarterly filing, which will be, is it due September 30th? Yeah, so we'll...
No, I think it's due end of October.
Yeah.
It's always the month after the end of the quarter.
Okay, and so that will allow us to see what's actually been spent at that point. And is that actually somehow in the tracker as well, or is that...
No, our reports are not in the tracker. Molly's working a lot on website work. fact, even learning some coding to make it a bit better. And so I think some new things in the next few weeks will probably go up on our website with the county's website.
Great.
And we are just internally talking about putting up our reports.
Yeah, it'd be great for the committee to just get a sense of that as the reports get filed. So, yes, legislator.
I have a question. So I see crisis stabilization is $175,000 was approved, but for the crisis stabilization, $2 million was approved.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But that is the, there was a separate capital project created for the A&E. So that's tracking that capital project for architect and engineering.
So you're saying the crisis stabilization is under the community wellness hub?
Correct. Yeah, that name is community wellness hub and crisis stabilization. Those are two names. It seems like crisis stabilization has morphed into community wellness hub, but if there's a specific name I should be using.
So they're different. I mean, the crisis stabilization center will be within the community.
Right, but the ARPA money was approved for the Crisis Stabilization Center and not for the rest of the work that was being done in the building. I mean, we approved the rest of the work, but not through ARPA. We only approved the Crisis Stabilization.
The reason why it's important is
should anything go wrong in that building of that building, that $2 million is dedicated to Crisis Stabilization. So should we have to move it somewhere else for some reason, that $2 million doesn't go with the mental health building. It goes with the crisis stabilization. Right. So that's the only reason why it's relevant that it's...
Absolutely. That was the intention of that.
And
money,
it hopefully
so.
Won't
it's
go wrong, and it
will
all work.
It's a cost that can be bonded. I mean, I think as you all spend down ARPA funds, right, we should reconsider whether any of that ARPA money should go towards the building of the Crisis Stabilization Center or the Wellness Center.
That's another story, but in the meantime, right now we approved $2 million for a Crisis Stabilization Center, and that helps offset the price of the hub, which is great, but it is $2 million for the Crisis Stabilization Center.
Yep. Good catch. Thank you. And that's what we need to do with this tracker, is just make sure that we're clear about what we've approved and what we think is going to be spent, and then what's actually being spent. So. Alright. Any last thoughts before we call it? We're good? Alright, thank you. A motion to adjourn, please.
Motion.
A second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? I'm sure no. Thank you all. Look at that.